My name is Emmett O'Carroll, and I am a plasterer. I'm from Dublin, Ireland, 36 years old, and I'm coming into my 19th year plastering full time. I've been in America now 7 years. My wife is from America. That's how I ended up here. I got into the trade right out of school, so the equivalent to America's high school. Our secondary school. I left and I flirted with horticulture and design for a while, and then ended up jumping into the plastering world because it was direct hands-on as opposed to going back to school and learning, you know, computers and bookwork and drawing. So I wanted to get straight into it. So I picked it up around late 2004 and I started the apprenticeship program in Ireland, which is a four-year course. And you spend 9 months of the year working with a master craftsman in whatever trade you pick. And then 3 months of that year in college studying and being tested. And each year you finish, the tests get harder, you go back to work, you get a pay increase, and it's a four-year course. And then you get out and you're qualified. You're not considered a master of anything, but you're qualified and you're able to go out and chase rates and go out on your own. And you have a certification then to kind of prove it. So I started off, my father's a plasterer, he's very good. And he was in the height of it in 2004 when I decided that I was going to get into it. And my brother was already an apprentice under him. And he was in partnership with his brother, who's a plasterer, my uncle, who's a brother, who's a plasterer. And he had two of his sons who were plasterers. So it was very much in the family. And when I decided to do it, I think it might seem a little harsh from my dad, but I think it was probably the best thing that happened to me. He thought I was trying to take the easy way out and jump into the family business rather than chase something else that I was interested in, which was horticulture. And he told me that he'll help me with it, but I got to go find someone else to apprentice under. And I did do that. And I live in the south side of Dublin. And the only person I could find was on the north side of the city. So I had to take 50-minute commute into the city and, you know, a 40-minute commute then from there out to meet him. And that's how I started the apprenticeship. And I stayed with him for a year and worked with him. And I got through my first year of my apprenticeship with him. His name is Paddy. He's an Englishman living in Ireland. And he was taught me a lot. And it was the best thing that happened to me because it taught me the first principles, I think, that you need to know as a trade, and that's responsibility. You've made a commitment to somebody, to a craft, and you need to show up. You know, you need to be respectful of people's time, and you need to learn that, you know, it's a job, it's real, and you need to commit to it. And he taught me that, you know. If I showed up late, I got docked. Showed up late 2 times in a row, I got sent home, you know. So I wouldn't have got that with my father. He would have held my hand a little bit better and, you know, woke me up, put me in the van straight from the house. It would have been a hell of a lot easier. So that was the first year. And then I left Paddy and I went to work for a guy I played sport with. I played Gaelic football, Irish national sport. And there was a guy on our team. He was a senior player. And as I started to come up to the senior level, I met this fellow. His name is John McGrail. And I started working for him. So I started working local. And John was great. John was great for me. John comes from a farming background. And a very hard worker, but he taught me to enjoy hard work, you know, jump in and enjoy it. And all the while, and he was a very good plasterer and had a lot of pride in what he'd done and taught me to be detailed and, you know, don't just skip areas that, you know, people won't notice, do it and do it right. John taught me a lot. And I got through about 2 years of my apprenticeship with John and the economy started to weaken. It was coming up to the 2008 crash that happened around the world, and the people we worked for were starting to dry up on work, and John didn't have enough to keep me going full time. So I eventually fell in with my dad. I got into the family business eventually, and it was brilliant. He kept me going then right up until 2010 when I left the country there. So I was working away with my dad, learning a lot. That was my real introduction to preservation work. That was where the interest started to spike in me. Like plaster at that, being that young, it was a job. Like, I like to be, at the time I didn't know it, but when I look back, it was more, I wanted to be social. I want to work with my hands. I want a bit of money in my pocket. So that's what drew me to it. When I look back on it, that's what kept me there. It was like, you know, I like to be involved. I like to be social, and I like to work with my hands, and I like that instant gratification of doing something. You know, you plaster a wall, you step back 2 hours later and you see I've done something today. So I love that. And at this time I had met my now wife, and she was living in Ireland with me, and we decided that it was time to move, and we moved to Australia. We ended up moving to Melbourne. Within a month, I got a job with an exterior render company, which did sand and cement-based plaster, so mostly exterior, over block and brick and weather cornices and outdoor details. And he sponsored me, and I ended up running the physical side of his company for 5 years down there, and I stayed there. And we moved from a lot of modern render style plasters to some older buildings in, and I and me and him collaborated together, and it was great. It was brilliant. It was again another introduction to the different side of the trade world. I was running crews at this stage, as opposed to just being a member of someone else's crew. I was running five, six guys at a time, and we were doing some small residential projects to big hotels, restoring old hotels, the facades of them, and that was great. Stayed with him, and I met some really cool plasterers while I'd done that. My right-hand man for the entire time I was there was a guy from Portugal, who at the time was in his 50s, and he had a bunch of experience. He taught me all kinds of different stuff I never even thought you could do, and so it was great. It really was eye-opening for me. And then after 5 years down under, we decided it was time to come back and start a family. We were engaged, and we wanted to move closer to home, and we decided on the States. So we came to in 2016, moved back to America, and within a year I had the green card, and I just opened up my own company. I said it was time for me to go out on my own and work for myself. And all I wanted to do was preservation. That's all I want to do. I didn't want to do any modern, but I had to, in order to build my name and get my reputation out there, I had to chase whatever I could get. And it's become clear it's very hard to find a plasterer over here that can work in the preservation world. So not only do a lot of people who work in old homes not even bother chasing plasterers, they just get drywall. They just don't even bother chasing it because they just hit dead ends all the time. So you're trying to, not only was I trying to just introduce myself to people, but I was trying to reinvoke, you know, this can be done this way. You can restore these old homes using modern materials, to re-skim and re-plaster and keep that character of your home. And within, I'd say within a year, that was it. It was done. I was too busy. And now I'm just trying to keep up with it all. Plaster, it's been around for forever, you know. It's and you know, from when they were putting mud up against old sticks to now, when they're, you know, they're spray coating it on with machines. It's been around forever, and it has a good resurgence coming back. People love that old character and history. They want that old plaster. Like, new modern day plaster was never invented to improve upon the performance of a product. It was only ever brought in to speed up, you know. That's all. That's drywall is just there to speed the process along. And I don't know which one was the catalyst for the other. If drywall coming in has made plaster as much rarer to find because the need for it was less, or if the trade itself was getting less and less, you know, popular, and then, you know, drywall. I'm not sure which one was the reason, but there is less and less people with the skill. But I do see a huge resurgence in desire for it to be applied and to be used in buildings, and in a modern and in a traditional way. So it's great. There's all plenty of different techniques to use for the finished plaster walls. There's Venetian plaster, which is marble dust ground down, and color additives added to it, like oxides, and they add it to the color, and it creates like a stone surface. You highly polish it, And you add texture and coloring to it, but the wall itself feels like a stone. It'd be like having a full tile on your wall. It's gorgeous. And that marble, once it's compressed through your trowel, as it's drying out, you add water and you compress it hard. It really feels like marble once it's all done and it's compressed together. And then there's Marmorino, which is a same process, but it's crushed seashells, and that gives, then you've got such a different texture to that, the same style feel, but one side of your wall you might see a white tone, and the next one is like a blue, because it all depends on what was crushed. And it's gorgeous, it's beautiful stuff. And there's and then the new modern plaster today is called veneer because it's so thin, but you can po highly polish that same quarry gypsum to really, really high sheen. And there's techniques that you can do to really burn the wall up and create tonal differences, and the way the light hit it will make it almost look 3D, and it's gorgeous. It can be really beautiful. I've done a project in Saco, Maine, and all the plaster was clay, so it was a clay-based plaster, clay and lime, and they were American clay out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they supplied all the product. And that gets troweled on. That's super breathable, super eco-friendly. Doesn't take from our planet at all when it's being made. It's a great product, and that has a leather feel to it. So as I trowel that up, because it's clay, it doesn't harden like the stone that we quarry. So it's got that leathery feel to it, and it's gorgeous, beautiful product. So then that's just the variety that's in our trade. There's huge amounts of wall coverings that you can do. So on top of doing flat surface plaster, we also do a lot of mold making. A lot of it's classical. The molding's great. I'd love to do it full time. It's a lot harder to push to get that much work to keep me busy full time. So, it's, and then, life gets in the way. You're paying your bills. I have a daughter to raise. I took over a workshop in Rye, New Hampshire, that I have, and I've had it for 3 years now, and I'm supposed to build a mold making studio in it. It is just storage. It's only ever been storage. I've got maybe 200 pieces that I've collected over the years, and my dad has sent over to me, and they're all in boxes. I'm just restoring buildings. I'm just out there working, I spent 2 years in Biddeford on one of the mills, restoring all the exterior using stucco. I'd love to bring my dad over to collaborate. So my dad is extremely talented and self-taught in that world, and he's done phenomenal work. He's done, I think, probably his best, I think, would be he worked on the library at the Lugalaw House, which is part of the Guinness Family Trust. And he was in there for a long time working away on that, and he's done some beautiful work on that building. And through connections here, I've been able to work with New Hampshire Preservation, and I've done a class on how to restore your old home, and we had a lot of people show up and show interest in wanting to learn the trade. We had a mix from homeowners who wanted to come in and learn how to, restore their own homes, to tradespeople who work in and out of these old homes and would love to add to their bag of skills and know how to fix these problems that they see all the time. But I'd like to do more classes like that to help bring back the trade. And also, I'd love to fly my dad over to do a mold making class. If the trades are something that appeal to you, and working with your hands and getting out there and working in those environments is something that you're interested in, there is plenty of avenues you can go down. Every state that I know has a preservation society, and every preservation society will have somebody on the other end of a phone that can put you in the right direction anywhere. And then most towns have historic groups set up that would also be able to set you on the right foot. But talking to different tradespeople, going into old historic homes that are set up like museums and stuff, they've all had tradespeople come through and work, and they would have contacts for that. And really not being afraid to push yourself out there and just connect with these people, because one thing you'll find about the preservation world is the people who work in preservation love preservation. They want to be there because it takes some time to get established. It takes a bit of time, to be successful and make money. And in order to do that, you kind of have to really want to do it. You could chase the residential and commercial side of the trades world, and you could chase that. And it's a lot easier. But to get into the preservation, you really want to have a love for it. And if you reach out to these people with an interest, they'll jump at it.